Nobody in the squad said much as they all walked back across four districts to the constable station in Jeevans. Etihad just knew there was going to be a big argument when they got there. Maxin was going to pick a fight, no matter what. Bijouli had been too much. Which meant Etihad was going to have to do something, and he was now starting to feel bad about not trusting them with the real enormity of everything he'd discovered. If the next couple of hours went wrong, then everything they'd achieved would be all over. There were a couple of other constables in the small hall who took a fast scan of the suppressed emotions seething through the squad and hurriedly made their exit. The thick wooden door slammed shut. Etihad raised his eyebrow at that. Someone's third hand was adrenaline-powered today. He unbuttoned his cloak's neck clasp and sat at his customary bench at the top end of the hall.
"My mother," Maxon said brutally.
"Yeah."
"Yeah. That's all you can see. Yeah."
"Did you really think Ival wouldn't try to apply some pressure?"
"Pressure? Lady be damned, that was my mother they used as a punch bag. My mother."
"It's his way of trying to get to me," Etihad said quietly. His hand went to his cheek of its own accord, stroking the tender flesh. "You're the only friends I've got, my one vulnerability. He's bound to use that as hard as he can."
"Yes,"
Cancine said so wistfully that Etihad shot her a curious glance. She shrugged. "My sister was hassled last week. She was carrying Diam at the time."
"Why didn't you tell me?"
Etihad exclaimed bitterly.
"Trust, probably,"
Maxon said viciously.
"Oh," Etihad flung his hands up in dismay, "in the lady's name." "We thought we were in this together, Etihad. We were with you at Birmingham Pool, remember? Does that mean nothing to you?"
"It means everything,"
Etihad shouted. Finally, he was too distraught to keep himself in check. They all swayed back as his doubts and confusions blazed out. He made an effort, gritting his teeth and placing his hands palm down on the old wood of the table.
"Sorry,"
he told their shocked expressions.
"Etihad, in the lady's name, what's wrong?" Boyd pleaded. "What happened to you, to your face? And why won't you talk to us anymore?"
"He didn't trust us with the Maiko warehouse," Maxon said harshly. "Why should he trust us with anything else?"
"You're such an arse," Cancine snapped at Maxon.
"I do trust you," Etihad said. Even to him it sounded like a bored recital. "I got burned when I was sneaking around the House of Blue Petals, that's all. It's not as bad as it looks."
"You went there by yourself?" Cancine asked disapprovingly.
"Yeah, it's how I've been keeping track of Ival."
"That's dangerous," Boyd said. "Etihad, you can't do that on your own."
Maxon let out a scornful grunt.
"He's the water walker. He can do anything. He doesn't need us holding him back, do you?"
Etihad sighed. This was worse than he'd steeled himself for. The warehouse raid was the most public thing we've ever attempted. Ival had laid a trap. He was going to make us, me, a laughingstock. The whole thing was set up to destroy my credibility. I just used some misdirection. There were over 100 constables involved, and we didn't know half of them. If everyone had known, it would never have worked.
"We're not everyone," Maxon barked. "We're your friends, your squad." Or so I thought.
"Hey, ease up," Dinley said. "It was good procedure."
"Yeah, well, I expected you to take his side."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Come on," Etihad said. "We can't do this. Ival will be laughing at us."
"So his opinion is valuable to you, is it?" Maxon said. "Whereas mine, no contest."
"That's not..."
"Don't get upset," Cancine interjected. "He's just angry."
"No shit,"
Maxon spat at her.
"Why do you think that is? I am a part of this fucking squad, this so-called team. I had faith in you, Etihad. Faith. Me, of all people, me. And how do you treat that? You just bloody use us to boost your own stature. The water walker saves the day again. Well, crap on that."
"I didn't use anyone. We were all on that raid together. I made you a vital part of it. Did you know there was going to be a robbery? Did you know where they were going to stash the platinum? Did you know there was going to be a switch?
So what are you saying? I'm not worthy enough? Because I can't spy as well as you?
Are any of us? Because that's what this is about. Even Dinley is pissed at the way you exclude us.
I am not, Dinley said, so quickly Ediard didn't even look at his friend's face.
If all you want is a bunch of constables who'll run around and do your bidding, then fine, Maxon said. There are dozens of them in this station alone. But if you want to work with me, then you are coming down off your tower and start trusting us again.
Screw you, Ediard said. You have no idea what we're up against, not the faintest clue. I'm protecting you.
I don't need your protection, and I know more about the gangs than you ever will, country boy. I grew up in Macathran.
I grew up in Macathran, Cansine said. Dinley did, Boyd did. You had a nice cushy life on the Uguru.
I did what?
Maxon pushed his face out towards Cansine.
Stop it now, Ediard said. I didn't include you in certain things because I was frightened.
They stopped arguing and shot each other puzzled looks. Ediard rested his elbows on the table and put his head in his hands. He was worried there were tears leaking from his eyes, he was so worked up.
You're all I've got. I don't want us broken up. Not just because I depend on you. We have something here. And it's more than just kicking the crap out of Ival. We had hopes. I couldn't stand it if those were broken. I'd be left with nothing once more. I'd rather be dead.
Cansine came and sat on the bench next to him as the others started to radiate concern.
What is it?
She asked, putting her arms round his shoulder.
What's the matter, Ediard?
We all trusted each other at the start. Nothing's changed, not really. Tell us.
Ediard lifted his head and stared straight at Maxon, letting his friend see all his anguish.
Do you want to do this?
Yes,
Maxon said, now looking really worried.
Really?
Yes.
Everyone?
Boyd and Dinley nodded.
Cansine squeezed his shoulder.
Of course.
All right, then. But I want you to swear on the lady that you won't shoot the messenger.
Hey, we're grown-ups, Maxon said.
No, we're not, Ediard said. Not really.
You're getting very depressing, Boyd said with a nervous smile. Just what do you want to tell us?
What we're up against. The scale of the gangs. I want to make you understand.
We do know, Ediard,
Dinley said sympathetically. They even tried to intimidate my sister Karna last Wednesday.
Lady, they won't do that again in a hurry.
Karna,
Maxon said.
She's the,
my big sister, Dinley said with a contented smile.
Very big.
Ediard cocked his head at Boyd.
Yeah, Boyd said dismally. Isowix had some more trouble.
So?
Maxon insisted.
What's your big secret?
I'll show you, Ediard said slowly. Sometime in the next few days. I'm not sure when, but be ready. When I call for you to go to the flight canal end of Gollard Street.
You mean near the Black Horse?
Maxon asked.
Yeah, but don't go in there for the lady's sake, and make sure you're not followed.
Easy.
Actually, it isn't. Ival uses G-Eagles to shadow all of us, but I'll take care of them. It'll be night, so that'll help you.
He does what?
Cansine asked. Just for a moment, her mind betrayed real alarm.
He watches us, Ediard said quietly. He has for the last month. I've been messing with the G-Eagles he uses, but I can't manage to protect you the whole time.
Shit.
Ediard climbed to his feet. He gave Maxon a sorrowful look.
I am sorry about Bidjuli.
I know.
Maxon stuck his hand out. Ediard shook reluctantly, still dreading what was to come.
Remember, the messenger is just that.
Got you.
Ediard went back to the court the next day to watch the prosecution and defense counsels deliver their closing statements. He was interested that Ival couldn't be bothered to turn up to hear Leanne be found guilty. Nor was he there the following day when a 25-year sentence was handed out. After the judges left the chamber, the constables from Jeevan's station crowded round Ediard to congratulate him. Then they had to make way for Grand Master Sparbill of the Chemistry Guild, who had been in court for every day of the trial.
Thank you, young man, Sparbill said, giving Ediard's healing face a close look.
The loss of that material would have meant a considerable financial weakness for my guild. I am in your debt.
I was doing my job, sir, Edyard replied.
I'm sure you were, but I remain grateful. If we can ever assist you, please, just ask.
I will. Thank you, sir.
Finnerton was right about you. I think you are of benefit to the city. A shame District Master Bice doesn't share that opinion, but don't worry. He is outnumbered in council.
Bice?
Edyard knew the name. Bice was Sampaloc's District Master. He'd never seen Bice turn up at the House of Blue Petals in person, but he knew the Master had extensive financial connections with Ival's organization.
High politics, I'm afraid, Sparbel said with a grin. Not that there is anything high about it, of course. Our little voting block in the council is full square behind you. Unfortunately, our opponents take the opposite view. But that's the way it is in council. If they had come down on your side, I'd probably be against you by now. Same with the weather. If they vote for sun, I'll vote for rain.
Ah, I see.
Take my advice. Don't put yourself forward as a candidate for chief constable for at least another 200 years. That way you can remain out in the city, where you'll still be in a position to accomplish something.
Yes, sir.
Edyard gave the Grand Master a formal bow, frowning at the man's back. The Grand Council is taking sides over me?
A drink tonight? Che asked.
This victory is probably more significant for you than Arminel's was. It shows the gangs you're not going away. That needs to be celebrated properly.
No, thank you. I have a date.
Ah, good for you, lad. Enjoy it while you can, while you're young. They turn sour when they get older.
Who?
Women. All of them.
Is everyone in this city a cynic? Edyard asked that evening.
Jessiel pulled a beer bottle out of the wicker hamper she'd brought.
Who's cynical?
Everybody, so it seems. Or maybe I'm just paranoid.
She smiled sweetly. You probably are.
Thanks. Edyard took the bottle and flopped down onto the maisonette's heavy old couch. He felt exhausted, even though all he'd done was sit around in court all day. Victory should have perked him up, yet all it seemed to have done was raise another bout of questions and doubt. How he longed for things to be as they were before Birmingham Pool. Life had been so much simpler then.
Put your feet on the stool. I'll pull your boots off.
He leant back and did as he was told. It was nice having Jessiel around. After that final night with Ranelagh, he'd almost sworn off family girls for life. Except he remembered how genuinely nice Jessiel was, almost the opposite of Ranelagh. She was undemanding, enthusiastic in bed, and discreet. At least she was now, which was a good thing, he reflected. He was desperate to recover some of his public dignity after those months of excess following Birmingham Pool. Her fiancé hadn't been in the city for 3 days before he was sent back out again, much to her dismay. They hadn't even managed to set a day for the wedding, so in the meantime she was happy to carry on seeing him, just not so visibly. Two lonely people, basically, he thought. There were few mornings when he didn't look out of the window, searching the brighter skies which would signal Salrana's return. He glanced guiltily at the letter propped up in one of the maisonette's alcoves. It had arrived yesterday. Salrana had written it 3 weeks earlier. That was how long a letter took to reach Macathran from Tralshire province. In it she explained how she might have to stay on for a few more weeks. The mothers were desperate for help, she said, and she couldn't let them down. There were so many people who looked to the church for help in Ufford.
Leanne got 25 years, Edyard said as they sat down to supper. His G-monkeys had been busy preparing the food the chefs in her mansion had packed in the hamper. The others got between 3 and 11 years.
That's good, she said.
Really? Have you noticed a drop in crime?
Did you mention something about cynicism?
Sorry.
He's going to be another 6 weeks at least.
Who?
Oh, right. I got a letter this morning. They're staying on in Reuter province to help another town. Eriak, I think.
Yeah, it's on the western side of the Ulfson Mountains.
You know it?
I passed it on my way here.
Well, they've got bandit trouble now. Hedyard looked up from the asparagus and cavefish quiche.
What sort of trouble?
Raids on hamlets, and the roads aren't safe. Honestly, the militia pushed them out of the estates around Tetuan, and they just pop up again a few miles away.
They have a habit of doing that. Frightening them away isn't good enough. They'll just come back later. If you want to be rid of them, you've got to push them back and back until they've nowhere to run to anymore. Don't give them anywhere to hide. Then you can go in for the kill. He stopped.
That might work.
What?
Nothing. Just an idea. There's not even any certainty that Eustace will come back after Arriac. Suppose the bandits appear somewhere else?
She started turning her silver vine ring, unconsciously rubbing the diamond.
He put his hand on hers, squeezing lightly. He'll be back.
Thanks. I know.
Did he mention if they have guns?
Guns? No, he hasn't said.
Do you think it's likely?
He might get shot.
Some bandits have guns. Not many.
Hedyard lied quickly, allowing her to sense a calm confidence in his thoughts. They just get hold of the odd pistol from farms, that kind of thing. To be honest, pistols have a very limited range anyway.
Oh.
She gave him a nervous smile.
Don't scare me like that.
Sorry. No sane bandit is going to tangle with a mounted militia squad. He'll be perfectly safe. You'll be married off by midsummer.
I hate that he had to go. It's all politics. Mayor Owen only sent the militia so he can look strong and benevolent at the same time. That's what Daddy said. And I'll bet Owen's guild merchants are there following the militia around, selling guns to the locals.
See? Everyone's a cynic.
She grinned at him. I guess we are.
Owen might have sent the militia for political gain, but it's been beneficial. Reuter needed help. The local sheriffs couldn't cope. Quite a few farming families have arrived in the city since New Year. I spoke with some of them. They were forced off their land.
I know. He will come back. Thank you, Hedyard. You're a lovely man.
After the meal, they settled down to read a book Jessal had brought, Cadril's Voyage, which told of the legendary merchantmen captain who'd opened up the trade route to the south, finding a navigable route through the straits of Gathsawal. Hedyard enjoyed the tales of ocean life and fights against pirates, even though he suspected the author had enlivened the tales somewhat. They took it in turns to read to each other, slowly sipping red wine as the coal in the stove hissed and snapped. Hedyard felt the tensions drain away from him. This was what he wanted his life to be like. Success in the courts, pushing the gangs from the streets, then home. Not back to the maisonette, but a true home. One with Salrana, maybe. He'd even seen a few vacant buildings in Kobara and Igadi that were possibles. They would need the room eventually, he hoped, for the children. Children who would know a city without the shadow of crime and the excesses of the families, playing in streets and parks where they were safe. And it could be done. His idea had been growing since supper, expanding in that lazy way that certainties possessed.
You look a lot happier,
Jessal murmured. She closed the book and leaned in against him.
You have a soothing voice, he told her.
Her nose rubbed against his cheek.
My voice, is it?
Yes.
I wish you had a piano in here. I'm quite an accomplished player, you know. Music would be extra soothing.
It was that casual grumble which made him smile so merrily. She really had no idea how little a constable earned. On his pay it would take months for him to buy a piano. We'd never get it up the stairs.
Never mind.
She kissed him, her thick hair brushing his face and neck.
I bought a new satin chemise today. It's not very big, I'm afraid. Would you like to see me wearing it? Well, trying to wear it.
Yes.
Say please.
Please, he croaked hoarsely. She got up, showing him a truly immoral smile.
Back in a minute.
She picked up the hamper and disappeared into the bathroom. Hedyard took a breath to recover. He was beaming in anticipation as he rolled off the couch and ordered the light down to a cozy glimmer, at which point he became aware of Vilby walking over the bridge into Silverham.
Oh, lady, no, he groaned.
What's the matter?
Jessal called out.
I'm really sorry about this, but...
The squad was waiting where Ediard had told them, huddled together under an overhanging wall on Gollard Street, where the pavement was only 4 feet wide. It was dark, with the nearest light coming from behind the undulations of a nebulae moulding on the wall 2 houses down. "Soraya was furious with me," Boyd was saying. "It was her great-aunt's annual ball. Half the district master families were there." He was dressed in a splendid cerise frock coat, with a white shirt that was all lace frills. Silver buckles gleamed on his knee-length boots.
"Sounds like you're making social progress," Cansine said. Her face wore a faint frown. She was glancing along the street as if searching for something.
"I didn't know he was going to call us away so suddenly."
"He was really worried about this," Maxon said. "That's not like our great water walker."
"Well, you didn't help," Dinley said. "Not the way you were shouting at Ediard the other day. All those wild accusations."
"I'm entitled," Maxon said, raising a finger for emphasis and waving it right in front of Dinley's face. "That was my mother they attacked. And it's his fault."
"No, it's not."
"Oh, yeah. If he knows so much like he claims, then he should have warned us. If I'd known what was happening, I could have stopped those thugs attacking my mother."
"We didn't tell him what was happening to us," Cansine said. "We're all to blame."
"He doesn't trust us. He couldn't even be arsed telling us about the G-Eagles. We're his decoys, that's all."
Ediard dissolved his concealment, appearing beside Maxen's shoulder.
"No, you're not."
"Oh, lady!"
Maxon jumped back in shock.
"Where in Honius did you come from?" Dinley demanded.
"I've been here all the time."
"You heard..."
Dinley's thin face blushed hotly.
"Now do you understand? This is not a game. I want to change this city. I want your help to do that."
"And you think that's the way to get it?" Maxon asked. "If a couple of insults and a bad temper can put an end to this squad, then we were never going to achieve anything. We were just some kids thrown together with nothing special holding us. I'm hoping that's not true. I'm not pretending I don't have a weakness. I made an ass of myself chasing girls. I'm too frightened to tell you everything I know about Ival. I didn't know how to handle the warehouse raid, so I went along with Ronark's suggestion, and I'm certainly not sure where we go from here. Although I've got an idea."
He shrugged.
"That's it." Maxon glanced round the others, unhappiness shining through his shielded mind.
"All right. That's honest enough.
Crap on inspiration, mind. But I'm willing to see what you want to show us."
"Me too,"
Cansine said.
"Yeah,"
Dinley said. Boyd gave a soft chuckle.
"Count me in."
"Thank you,"
Ediard said.
"Do we get to learn the concealment trick?" Boyd asked eagerly. "I always thought it was a city myth."
"Oh, you get to know it," Ediard said. "You're going to need it. Ready for the gift?"
"Yeah," the squad chorused.
After half an hour practicing along the street, Ediard led them into the Black Horse Tavern. They weren't perfect. Boyd's concentration kept slipping. Maxon's farsight wasn't half as good as he always claimed, which meant he couldn't combine the ability with his third hand in a way that was truly effective. But Cansine and Dinley were surprisingly adept. Apart from the occasional lapse from Boyd and Maxon, when their ghost-like shape would flare out of nowhere, they remained invisible, certainly from casual scrutiny. The only way they knew where each other was standing was by a tiny, direct long talk, the kind of thing they'd practiced 100 times out on the streets. Ediard helped by dimming the tavern's lights around them, producing long, deep shadows. They crept between them, passing unseen through the back rooms. Ediard's nerves built with every step up to the second floor where the private rooms were. Maxon was playing along for now, but how he'd react to this? Without Maxon, the squad would be seriously weakened, and he was going to need their full strength if he was to have any hope of success over the gangs.
"Ready?" Ediard asked outside the door.
"Yeah,"
Dinley whispered. Then Ediard heard a metallic click, a pistol's safety catch pulled back. "Is one of you armed?"
"Yes," Boyd said.
"Well, actually, all of us are," Dinley said defensively. "We thought we were going to be raiding a gang hideout."
"Oh, lady, no, no. This isn't a raid.
It's not actually dangerous. We just have to catch them in the act. So put the pistols away, please.
Several grumbles rolled along the apparently empty corridor. Fumbling sounds followed.
Ready?
Ediard asked again, reflecting on the impossibility of acting as a team when you couldn't actually see each other.
Go.
As one, they dissolved their concealment. Ediard used his third hand to smash the lock and flung the door open. The squad charged in. Vilby's face was a mask of astonishment and fright. His head lifted off the pillows to stare at the squad. He couldn't move any further. His own handcuffs fastened his wrists to the odd metal hoops driven into the wall above the bed. Nanit, who was straddling his chest, holding a jar of honey in one hand, turned round and let out a soft gasp of shock. Then she saw one of the intruders was Maxen, and her face registered real concern.
Lady Crapit!
Ediard could sense the long talk yell she was directing out towards the other end of the city. It wasn't much.
They've caught me with Vilby. I never sensed them coming. They were bloody invisible.
His own face was part of the accompanying gift she sent. No one replied to her.
Don't come back to the station, Ediard told Vilby, and get you and your family out of the tenement by tomorrow evening. Only constables live there.
But...
Ediard closed his third hand round the man's chest. Honey squelched out around the edges of his grip.
Don't!
He growled in warning. Vilby sagged in defeat. Kansine lifted an eyebrow as she gazed at the tacky mess covering the man's groin.
Well, thanks a whole lot, Vilby. I'll never be able to eat a meringue again.
Boyd sneered down.
You know, you really need to leave them in the oven longer. A proper meringue is never that sticky in the middle.
Is that right?
An interested Dinlay asked as they turned and walked out of the door.
Oh, yes. Any half-wit baker's apprentice knows that.
Maxen hadn't said a word. He was staring at Nanit, who returned the look unflinchingly.
Come on,
Kansine said. She put her hand on Maxen's shoulder and gently propelled him out of the room. Ediard gave Vilby a derisory wink and closed the door as he left. The waitress in the Ollivan's Eagle was puzzled by the squad's lack of good humor as they clustered together in the corner booth. Ediard tipped her a brass farthing and scooped the beer glasses off her tray with his third hand. He put the first one down in front of Maxen.
Sorry, he said cautiously.
Maxen shook his head and put his hand round the glass. He stared intensely into the dark amber liquid with its thick head. It's a war of who knows most, Ediard said.
Lady, Kansine grunted heavily. I think we get that now, Ediard.
She took a long drink of beer.
Was anyone I've...
No.
That's lucky, for them. I would have ripped their balls off and stuffed them where the sun doesn't shine.
Boyd ventured.
About Soraya.
A lovely girl, don't worry.
So it's just me then, is it?
Maxen said bitterly. He was still glaring at his beer. He hadn't managed to look at Dinlay since they'd left the Black Horse.
Not exactly. Ediard cringed as he gave Dinlay an awkward glance. Kyron.
No,
Dinlay squawked in horror. She's a constable.
Boyd turned his head slowly to give Dinlay a fascinated look.
Who's Kyron?
Her father is in debt to one of Ival's lieutenants in Faega. She's helping to pay it off.
She can't be.
You never said anything about a Kyron to me, Boyd said with a rising smile. You sly old thing.
Sorry, Ediard said.
Oh, lady.
Well, aren't you the clever one? Maxen said, still not looking up.
Actually, no, Ediard said. He took a breath. I'm sure you all remember Ranelly.
Kansine actually spilt some of her beer.
What? Ediard's shoulders slumped. The Gilmorn family has strong ties with Ival. It's all part of the way the port works, I discovered afterwards. Too late afterwards, unfortunately. I think that's how Ival found out I knew about Vilby. He couldn't quite bring himself to tell them about that night.
Wait, he knows you knew?
Yes.
But, oh, lady be damned.
She took another gulp of beer.
So,
Boyd said with a frown. If he knew that you knew he... I don't get it. Why would he go ahead with the Chemistry Guild robbery if you both knew what was happening?
I told you it's a war of who knows the most, and then how you apply it.
Maxon finally looked up, fixing Boyd with an icy glare.
Get it now. All of this is a giant pissing contest between Ival and Edyard. Which of them can outsmart the other?
Which is why you have to understand, Edyard said firmly.
Fully understand.
Well, I understand now, Maxon said bitterly. He faced up to Dinley.
I'm the idiot who got you shot. Me.
Hardly, Dinley said with a nervous guffaw.
I told her. I said we were going to do undercover work after we talked about watching Bolton Street.
When did we say that? Edyard asked.
Day we caught Armanel in the storeroom,
Cansine supplied.
Oh, yeah.
Armanel used it, didn't he?
Maxon said. He used that to mount the ambush at Birmingham Pool.
We don't know anything for certain, Edyard said. What I was trying to show you tonight is just how smart and organized Ival is. Not only that, his organization is big. It reaches right across the city.
You've made your point, Cansine said. We were naive. That will stop now.
I'm sorry,
Maxon said. He was pleading with Dinley now.
You didn't shoot me. It was my fault.
No, it wasn't, Edyard said. You all know Armanel, what he's like. If they hadn't come after us that day, it would have been another. You don't send people like Nanit to spy on us unless you're making a real effort to eliminate us.
And Kyaran,
Dinley said forlornly.
And Kyaran, Edyard conceded. That means he's still out to get us, even more since the warehouse. It's going to get ugly.
She was beautiful,
Dinley said. He took off his glasses and polished the lenses intently.
We're all good, though, aren't we, Water Walker?
Boyd said cautiously.
Tell us that, at least. Tell us nobody here tonight belongs to Ival.
We're all good, Edyard promised them.
Nanit,
Maxon moaned, and slumped back into his seat.
What about the others? Have any more girls belonged to Ival?
Edyard grinned. I don't have the time to keep track of that list.
Nor your own, it would seem, Cansine observed archly.
Nor mine, he conceded.
Lady, this is wonderful, she muttered. We have to seek your consent for our lovers now. It's like I'm living at home again and getting my mother's approval.
What were her criteria? Boyd asked eagerly.
Well, she wouldn't have let you through the front door, that's for sure.
Edyard laughed. It's not that bad.
Cansine gave him a level gaze.
Yes, it is.
You don't have to tell me who you're with every night, and as of now, I'm not going to Farsight. Just
be paranoid.
I was going to say cautious. If you want me to check out a new acquaintance, I will.
Paranoid is good, Boyd said. And like all of you, I, of course, chose very well.
You had no choice at all, Cansine said. Soraya chose you. She makes all the decisions for you.
She does not. I am my own master.
Cansine reached forward and plucked the sleeve of his remarkable frock coat.
Did you choose this? Did you even pay for it?
Boyd turned red as the others laughed.
So what do we do now? Dinley asked.
And he does mean we, Maxon said.
That's right. Isn't it?
Yes, Dinley stumbled.
It's just Kyaran.
Get rid of her, Maxon said harshly. She's not your girlfriend, she's his whore. Do it with long talk. That's nice and insulting. In fact, I'll be happy to do it for you.
Would you?
Maxon turned to Edyard. Do you want to use her first?
No, he said. No, it's tempting. But if we're going to do this, I don't want us stooping to his methods.
It's not going to be that clean, Cansine warned.
I know. He smiled round at his squad, his friends. But we'll manage.
So what exactly do we do now? Boyd asked.
I've been thinking about this, Edyard told them.
The biggest part of Ival's income comes from the protection rackets. He has teams in every district intimidating shopkeepers and stallholders. I want to push them out. I want to start by making Jeevans clean, then keep going. Force them to retreat across the city until we've got them penned up in Sampaloc.
Then what? Kansine said. And how would you make them retreat there? Do we intimidate them?
They'll fight back. I don't know the details. We need to consult with Grandmaster Finnerton about how to begin such a scheme, and the politics behind it. We'd certainly need Grand Council support, maybe even a new law.
All right, she said. Even if you get him to support you in council, and we get all the station captains to play along, and 100 other crappy, impossible details sorted out, how do we find them? There must be hundreds of gang members working this racket. Are we all going snooping round the House of Blue Petals?
Ah. Edyard gave them a rather smug grin, and reached into his tunic to produce a thick black notebook. He put it down between all the beer glasses.
You must be talking about this list I made of all the names I overheard.
A grand alliance against gang-related crime, Grandmaster Finnerton said. Nice idea. He turned in his high-backed chair to stare out through his office window. Edyard and the squad sat in smaller chairs in front of the big desk, all of them trying not to gape at the remarkable view offered by the office's vantage point.
Do you think the council would support it, sir? Edyard asked.
If it hadn't been for the tea and biscuits served to them by the G-chimps, Edyard could well imagine himself as part of some lowly apprentice class being lectured by the Grand Master.
If you went up to individual masters and representatives to ask them for help expelling the gangs, each and every one would look you straight in the eye and pledge their full and unswerving support, save Vice, of course. Privately, any new law to banish suspected gang members wouldn't even get read out in council, never mind voted on.
Why not?
Dinlay asked.
Expense. Legally proving a man is a gang member would consume a lot of time in court, and an even greater amount of lawyer's time, which never comes cheap. And what would you effectively be accusing them of? If you can prove membership, you can prove felony, which can get them carted off to the mines anyway.
No, you need some other way.
Edyard groaned. It had seemed like such a good idea. Finnerton swung back to face them.
Don't give up, Edyard. You're the water walker. We all expect great things of you now.
He produced an enigmatic smile. More than creeping around bordellos at night, anyway. Edyard blushed.
So what would you advise to get rid of them? Kansine asked.
If you want anything done, you need to make it to everyone's advantage. Support is essential. The wider the support, the better the chance you have of succeeding.
But the council must have been trying to get rid of the gangs for years, Edyard protested. Why has there been no progress?
I'm going to sound boring on the subject, but expense, not just in financial terms. Consider how Ival's lieutenants control the dockers. The merchant families have a nice quiet arrangement with Ival. They pay him to keep the dockers in line. Take that control away and the dockers will demand decent pay, and quite right, too. It's a skill controlling teams of G-monkeys to remove the contents of a ship's hold or fill it. So they get more money, which has to come from the ship owner and warehouse merchant and shopkeeper. The cost will be passed on to the customer. The price of everything goes up. Admittedly, not by much, but it's the start of an uncontrollable reaction, a destabilization, if you like. Why shift the balance of power in an arrangement that works? And the dockers are just the tip of the iceberg. So many things would change.
Once more, Edyard remembered what Ranelagh had said. External change is revolution.
But the gangs are wrong, he insisted. The law must prevail.
Yes, indeed. But you of all people should know by now how entrenched they are in the city.
There must be a way.
Find a method of gathering a broad spectrum of support, Finnerton said. From there you can go forward.
I need the support of the council.
Ultimately, yes. But you must start at the other end. Down on the street where the gangs are felt every day. Tell me, before you decided to mount your crusade, what was happening out there? I don't mean among the rich and worthless of my class, but people who were directly affected by the gangs and their violence.
people who had given up looking to the constables for aid.
They were forming street associations, Boyd said.
Yes, vigilantism, which the council also frowned upon, not least because such associations circumvented the law.
Edyard tried to understand what Finnerton was hinting at.
We support the street associations.
No, the station captains don't approve, for the simple reason that street associations undercut their authority and that of the courts.
Then what? He asked, confused.
You can't support them, but there's nothing to stop you sharing a drink in the tavern after duty, now is there?
Ah, Maxon said, and we might just discuss who is going round traders to extort money, and what they look like, and where they live.
Indeed you might.
And those private citizens are within their right to call for assistance when the gangs do come calling, Cancine said.
If they know for sure that a constable squad would come, they would be more inclined to cooperate, Finnerton agreed.
And if cooperation at that level were subsequently seen to work, Edyard mused,
it would be supported, Finnerton concluded. A support among people who are not easily bought off by political horse trading. Pressure would grow on the district representatives to continue and expand the campaign.
But we're still back to the original problem, Edyard said. Arresting them and hauling them into court. Each case takes weeks and costs a fortune. Not to mention tying us up as we sit around for days waiting to be called as a witness. If we remove one of them, Ival will send 10 to replace him. I need to push the whole lot of them out of Jeevan's.
Finnerton eyed the Genistar egg sitting on his desk. What you need is a legal option. Have you consulted a lawyer?
This is the joy of a constitution that has reigned supreme for an unbroken 2,000 years, Master Solorin said contentedly. He was sitting behind his desk, which was piled with folders that strove to mimic the towers of Eerie.
Edyard had trouble seeing him, they were so high.
You can find a law to cover every eventuality. Politicians love to pass laws. It shows the people they are working hard on their behalf.
He coughed and reached for a lozenge in the little brown paper bag under a skewed tower of green and blue folders.
Then it can be done? Dinley asked eagerly.
Edyard had brought Dinley with him, while Maxon and Cancine went to meet Sir Tersis. Not that he didn't trust Dinley with anything. It was just that Maxon would be better suited to deal with the chief of the Silvarum Stallholders Association. Boyd, of course, was with Isoix, discussing their notion with the Jeevan's Chamber of Trade.
Such impatience, Master Solorin muttered disapprovingly.
One of his G-monkeys brought a thick leather-bound tome over to his desk and placed it gently on the huge square of blotting paper in front of the ancient lawyer. When he'd been shown in by a legal apprentice, Edyard had thought the whole office had been built from books. Each of the five walls were covered from floor to ceiling in shelving, holding thousands of volumes of law. There might have been a window, but it had long since been blocked over. The ceiling had three blunt stalactites that shone orange, giving the books a dingy brown hue. Master Solorin opened the book. He licked the tip of his forefinger and began to turn the pages. Edyard wanted to volunteer to help. It was all so painfully slow. He deliberately didn't turn to look at Dinley.
Ah-ha! Master Solorin said happily. I thought I remembered this one.
Sir? Edyard asked.
I believe I may have found what it is you are looking for.
Edyard leaned forward. The page the book was open at had grayed over the decades, but the ink was still firm and black.
Here we jolly well go, Master Solorin said.
His shaky hand traced a line of the print, his mouth working silently.
What does it say? Dinley pleaded.
Edyard shot him a warning glance.
It says, Constable Dinley, that 932 years ago the Grand Council passed the bylaw of district exclusions. This is an edict which allows the district master or district representative to declare the right of admittance revoked for any person deemed detrimental to the sanctity of the locale. Issuance of such warrant may be duly authorized by the district master or district representative on their own authority,
without supervision by a judge or magistrate. He looked up from the book. I believe it was proposed in council by the district master of Kobara, so that he might prevent an over-amorous suitor from wooing his only daughter. If you remember your history, Constable Dinlay, the two young lovers in question were Henley and Gistella.
Really?
Dinlay said with a happy smile. He turned to Ediard. They eloped on the Oxmain and founded Love's Haven, and planted the vineyards there. That province still produces some of the best wines on Corentia.
Wonderful, Ediard said, resisting the impulse to use his third hand to give Dinlay a good smack.
So can we use this law to ban gang members from coming into Jeevans and Silvarum, without having to legally prove they're gang members?
Any person for any reason, provided their name is on the warrant and signed by the district master or
Yes, the district representative. How do I get them to sign?
Oh, dear lady, were my lectures completely in vain?
You petitioned them, Dinlay said proudly.
Indeed, Constable Dinlay, I am glad not all of my words fell on deaf ears. As a resident of Macathran, you have, under most ancient law, the right to make a petition of enactment, such that a district master or,
Master Solorin paused for emphasis, a district representative can require the constable station commander of their district to enforce whatever law the supplicant believes has been violated.
Now, as the assistance of the citizenry is implicitly required, as stipulated in the Articles of Formalization of the Constabulary 622 years ago, this elder right of petition has subsequently fallen into disuse. However, it has never been retired.
You mean we can use this loophole to get the district master to sign the warrants? Ediard asked.
The skin of Master Solorin's ancient face produced even more creases as he frowned in disapproval.
You will never become a lawyer, Constable Ediard, for which blessing my guild will doubtless be most relieved. There is no such thing as a loophole. Lawyers merely advise our clients on how to apply laws and the precedents they establish.
Thank you, sir. Ediard rose from his chair.
A word of caution, my young friend.
Sir?
You can petition them to enact a law, but you cannot force them to undertake said enactment. To obtain those signatures, you will need their cooperation.
I understand, sir. My colleagues are working on that.